I don't know about you, but I've been spending less and less time in the last few weeks watching the news. I have never seen such a divisive and angry climate environment as we see in our nation today. The political tone and overtones and undertones and currents of what's happening is just truly alarming. Many people in our nation harbor bitter feelings toward the former president, accusing him of being ineffective or even being harmful to national security, while many others are hostile toward the newly elected president and say that they don't accept him as their president, don't accept the validity of the election, and they resent the changes that he is working and trying to implement. Every day, it seems, there are more massive protests about the president or his decisions or his choices to fill cabinet positions. The protests themselves are the result of unrest and dissatisfaction among the public, which is largely due to a history that we have of ineffective leadership on a national level. Of course, on a local level, that's not really much better, is it? I just give an example of where we live. The school district in my community has been so corrupt and so inefficient for the last several years that the schools are in a terrible level of debt. So now property taxes will be skyrocketing for the next several years to try to make up for that inept mismanagement. The property owners wind up having to pay for the mistakes of the inept leadership. Leadership is an issue. It's led to many serious problems in our nation today. Today here at services, or before services, we had the first of what will be a series of classes called the Christian Leadership Training Program. It's a program that's based on other training opportunities that have been offered in the past to help explain and illustrate the need for and show how we can be growing, all of us, in our ability to be the right kinds of leaders in God's church. In our first class today, we focused on the most basic and most fundamental requirement of a leader, that is Christian leadership. Christian leadership is the focus of this program, and the fundamental requirement we started with today is the need to have the heart of a godly servant. The heart of a godly servant. When we consider the leaders we have, whether they're local or national or even international, we surely don't see much evidence of leaders who have a godly heart or who know how to govern effectively. This afternoon, I want to base the sermon on the primary point that was made in the class that we had a little earlier. The title of the message is Godly Leadership. We're going to talk about leadership that is properly motivated and that is that seriously or properly serves the people. The leaders we have now, compared to what God intended, what did God intend the leadership to be for his nation? And, most importantly, how can we prepare to be leaders in the millennium? We have that opportunity. We have that responsibility. How can we prepare now to be the leaders that God, or that Jesus Christ, after he returns, can use in his nation? Let's begin in Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3 is a prophecy that we reviewed not too long ago as we've begun a series of studies here in the book of Isaiah. And the prophecy we'll look at again in the first few verses here seems to describe the condition of our national leadership today. As I talk about that, I'm doing so in a very general sense. I'm not taking any political sides. Sometimes we have our opinions and we have our feelings about who might do a better job. But when we back away from the whole scene and look at it and see what godly leadership would be like, we realize that it doesn't matter which party is in charge or which man is trying to make the changes. In the bigger picture, it doesn't make that much difference. Because look at the way that the leadership is described. Begin in verse 1 of Isaiah chapter 3. Behold, the Lord of hosts, takes away from Jerusalem and from Judah the stock and the store, the whole supply of bread and the whole supply of water. Now that's a prophecy relating to a time of famine and drought and shortage that will come upon his people. He'll eliminate or he'll take away the whole supply of the staples of life, bread and water, and leave the people destitute in that sense. That's a part of the prophecy. It's the side of the effect of the punishment that will come upon the people. But beginning in verse 2, we find what else God will take away from his people. The mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet, the diviner and the elder, the captain of 50 and the honorable man, the counselor and the skillful artisan, and the expert enchanter. This is speaking of God stripping away from his nation the leaders who would be effective in caring for the people. God will take away the skilled leaders at every level. As you read through the description of those who are taken away, it speaks of the judge, the prophet, the elder, and the diviner. The diviner, or the it speaks primarily, it seems, looking at the Hebrew, of religious leaders. Not speaking of a mystical kind of a leader, but a religious leader, a prophet, those who speak on behalf of God. So the political, the military, the social, the religious leaders, the backbone of a nation that would be able to provide the kind of direction that the people would need, all of these, God warns, will be taken away. The enchanter is mentioned in verse 3. It's in the King James Version, it's translated the ancient or the elder. In other words, the experienced people. Those who would have some good sense based on what they have been through, the kind of leaders that would be effective, again, in caring for the people. God warns in these two verses that he's going to strip away from his people those who would be effective leaders. And look what he leaves them with, verse 4. I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them. Now, that's not talking about literally a five-year-old being, the president or the leader of the nation. It's talking about leaving the people to be led by immature, childish, ineffective leaders. And frankly, you look at what's happening in our nation's capital, you see the bickering and the absolute refusal to cooperate on any level, divided right down the middle along whatever party lines there are. How childish can it get? No one seems to have the real needs of the nation in mind. It's just what they think, what they want, and how they want it to be. And it is causing all kinds of havoc in our nation. The structure of our nation is being torn away. And honestly, this is just the beginning. You think back before this election cycle started. There was division. There was controversy. There were people who were in serious disagreement. that you don't have to go back very many years to find a time when there was at least some cooperation, at least some working together. I guess you can go back 8 years, maybe a little more than that, or within that time frame, and you can see the steady decline of reasonable people making decisions that will help the entire nation, replaced by childish bickering and immature approaches. Verse 5, here's the result. The people will be oppressed. Everyone by another, everyone by his neighbor. The child will be insolent toward the elder and the base toward the honorable. That's kind of a general description, but I think we can see within it a description of the protests that are shaking many of the major cities. Insolence, disrespect, rejection of what is honorable and proper, even in a relationship between people. And it's becoming oppressive. And it's becoming dangerous. And very likely is going to continue to be worse. As we look back at this last election cycle, we see how much things have deteriorated just in the last 2 or 3 years. It makes you wonder what's going to happen the next time around. What's going to happen if the parties switch places again and everybody starts undoing what somebody else has just done? What a sad circumstance this nation is in. And this prophecy in Isaiah describes what is happening. And it's a general prophecy. It's not real specific to exactly what is happening. But I think we see the pattern. I think we see what is happening in our nation today. Verse 6, it'll get to the point where, you know, man will be considered to be a ruler just because he has a few resources. You've got a house, you've got clothes, you be our leader. You know, as God strips away those who have the experience and the maturity that could be leaders. Now, I'm not sure that those potential mature leaders have existed for some time now. But we see the situation continuing. Interesting note, though, in verse 10, in this same context. Say to the righteous that it should be well with them, for they shall eat of the fruit of their doings. Even in this contentious time of difficulty and of the breakdown of a society, those who are obedient, those who are righteous, it says it will be well with them. God will take care of those who do continue to be faithful to him, even in those very unsettling and difficult times. We can drop down to verse 12 and see that the summary of the condition of society is shown again here. As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, those who lead you cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. Again, it illustrates the immature, childish recklessness of those who are supposedly leading. The reference here to women ruling over them may be a literal thing, or it may be in a sense that women refers to the weakness of the leaders, that they cannot or do not lead effectively. It's like children and women are in charge. That's not to say anything negative about women or about even children for that matter. But it's speaking here and addressing in this whole context the immaturity and the inability, the unwillingness of people to lead properly. In any event, whoever is leading, it says, do not, are leading the people into error and into ways that are destructive and ways that will end badly. It's kind of a sobering prophecy. And when we look at it in light of the conditions that we are looking at today, it seems that we're headed steadily down that path in the wrong direction. But I don't want to focus too much this afternoon on just the failures of our current leaders. What I want to look at is a few of the many scriptures that give instruction to leaders. Scriptures that describe what God intended to provide for the civil government leaders that he wanted to have ruling over his people. And then where we're going to go with that is to show how we are preparing to be the leaders that God or that Jesus Christ will use in his government when he returns. So let's review, first of all, instructions that God gives to leaders. This is the kind of leader that God intends to have over his people. Let's go back to Deuteronomy, the first chapter. Deuteronomy, the first chapter. And we're going to look at verses 9 through 15. Now, just quickly, the setting here, I think, is one that we would recognize. This was the entire book of Deuteronomy is the review of God's law and of his covenant that Moses offers to the people just before they enter the promised land. Their government has not yet been established, at least their nation hasn't been. The structure of the government has been established as they came through the wilderness, but they haven't yet entered into their land. And so the nation has not yet, in that sense, become established. And Moses is reviewing with them the, in this instance, we'll look at the leaders that they should have. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 9, I spoke to you at that time, that is, this is as they were coming out of the land of Egypt, Moses is speaking. He said, look, I told you that I alone cannot bear you or take care of you. The Lord your God has multiplied you, and here you are today as the stars of heaven in multitude. May the Lord God of your fathers make you 1,000 times more numerous than you are and bless you as he has promised you. But how can I alone bear your problems and your burdens and your complaints? Moses said that leading you as a nation has gone beyond what one person can do. It's too much for one person to be able to handle. So here is what he told the people years before as they were leaving Egypt. Verse 13, choose wise, understanding, and knowledgeable men from among your tribes, and I will make them heads over you. This was the beginning of the structure that God was establishing for the proper leadership of his people. The people were to choose wise, understanding, and knowledgeable men. And you answered me and you said, well, the thing which you're suggesting is good. So, verse 15, I took the heads of your tribes, wise and knowledgeable men, and made them heads over you, leaders of thousands, leaders of hundreds, leaders of fifties, leaders of ten, and officers for your tribe. A couple of things to notice here. First of all, I find it interesting that the people were to choose those that would become their leaders. Now, I'm not saying this is a democratic process, but the point is that the people knew those among them who were men of reputation, men of standing, men of character, that they would feel positive or good about having in a leadership position. The process by which those people were chosen is not given, but they were chosen based on their character and on their ability. And then we see the different levels of responsibilities that the men were to have. I commanded you, verse 16, I commanded your judges at that time to hear the cases between your brethren and judge righteously between a man and his brother or the stranger, that is, the non-Israelite resident, who is among them. You shall not show partiality in judgment. You shall hear the small as well as the great. You shall not be afraid in any man's presence, for the judgment is God's. The case that is too hard for you, bring to me. Moses says, bring it up to his level, and I will hear it. So we see here a structure that was to be developed. First of all, any decision that was made was to be made carefully, fairly, without any kind of partiality, and based upon God's law. This was the responsibility that the leaders were to have. They were to make fair and impartial judgments. And if it was too complicated, they would move it up to another level. Notice also in verse 8 that the leaders, there were leaders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. In other words, from the highest level of responsibility down to the local level, down to the school board level, they were to be people who were of good character, good standing and reputation, and they were to lead in this way. So God was, in his structure, was providing them with this proper form of leadership and government at every level, from the highest level down to the local neighborhood or community level. Now, actually what we see here in Deuteronomy 1, and what Moses is referring to, is an event that took place much earlier. We can go back and see where this structure was established way back in Exodus chapter 18. If you remember the account here, Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, was observing as he was sitting in his tent, and all day long people came to him with every level and every kind of issue, expecting Moses to make a decision about it. And it says in verse 17 that Moses' father-in-law said to him, "Hey, this isn't working. This is not a good thing. This is not the way it should be. Both you and these people who are with you will surely wear yourselves out. It's too much for you. You're not able to perform it. So listen, and here's what I'm counseling you to do. Stand before God for the people so that you may bring the difficulties to God, and teach them the statutes and the laws, and show them the way in which they must walk. Verse 21, you shall select from all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and place them to be rulers of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens." So this is where that structure was first introduced. It was a system that was advised by Jethro's father-in-law, certainly inspired by God, that this would be the way in which there would be proper leadership for the people. Moses was to choose, and we saw in Deuteronomy 1 that the people were part of the process, able men who were capable, competent, and who had showed evidence of wisdom, men who feared God, that is, men who were humble and obedient, had a sense of perspective and putting themselves in a right light in terms of their relation, who they were and how they were to be in relation to God. Men of truth, trustworthy, credible, men of integrity. Men who hated covetousness. In other words, men who were not corrupt, not likely to be tempted by bribes, not in it out of selfishness, but to serve the people. And then, through this system, they would bring the difficult matters to higher levels to resolve difficulties. Now, first of all, I'm not saying that this ever was fully implemented. The people of Israel didn't really have the character and the leadership to establish in this way. But this was what God intended. this was the way that it was supposed to work. And I have to ask, how different might things be in our nation if our representatives in Washington, D.C. met these qualifications? What if they were able, capable, wise men who fear God? Many of our leaders, I suppose, are in some sense capable and competent and smart. But do they fear God? Are they men of truth? Do they hate covetousness? I don't know what it would be like if we had representatives that really served the nation in that way. But this is what God intended. Again, from the lowest level of community up to the highest level to Moses, who at that point was responsible to lead the nation. But of course, it won't happen because our society is not based on the teaching and the application of God's law. It's not going to happen here. We only see it getting worse as our leaders, as we saw in Isaiah, continue to lead us down the path of destruction. I want to take a moment, though, to mention one other aspect of this, that we as a church do not advocate the application of God's law in place of the government that is responsible for our nation. In other words, we're not looking as a church for our own kind of Sharia law. You see, that religion wants to impose their laws instead of the government laws, and it's a very harsh application. That's not what we're talking about. The church does not advocate applying God's laws instead of or in place of the laws of the land. Paul and other New Testament writers tell us to comply with the laws of the land, to cooperate, to recognize that God has allowed people to have positions of responsibility, and we're not to fight against it. We don't obey man's law when it conflicts with God's law. But I'm not talking about, you know, taking over and suddenly imposing God's law, covenant law, in this society. It wouldn't work. God has allowed governments to have control for now. He's allowed people to have responsibility as leaders. But we can be sure that those leaders will be held accountable for the way that they lead. And if they're causing harm to his nation, that's something that they're going to have to answer for. But what I'm illustrating here is simply the kind of leaders that God did intend for his people to have. Whether they really ever had them or not is a different issue. But this was what he described. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 16. Deuteronomy 16. There are a number of places where these descriptions are given. I'm not going to read all of them. Deuteronomy 16, verse 18. It says, "You shall appoint judges and officers in all your gates, which the Lord your God gives you, according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment." Again, this is talking about on a local level, the gates of all the cities. Remember that there were times when it kind of mentions in passing that the elders were at the gates. Well, this was kind of the central area where decisions were made and people of authority would gather and meet to judge and to make decisions. So the general picture here is that in each community, there would be at the gates or at the central decision-making location, there would be people who would judge with just judgment. "You shall not pervert justice, for you shall not show partiality, not take a bribe, for a bribe blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You shall follow what is altogether just, that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you." again, as we look at what happens in the world around us, how many times do you see something that just doesn't make sense? It's just not right. It's not justice. It's not dealing with a situation properly. And you know that on some level, eyes are blinded by bribes, by, what do they call it, quid pro quo, whatever it is. I'll scratch your back and you scratch mine. I'll give to you and you give to me. That people have these deals that are in the works that advance them at the cost of justice or of doing what is right, that wind up oppressing the poor. How often throughout the prophets do you find the condemnation of God's nation because they oppress the fatherless and the widows and the needy for their own selfish increase? When you look at what God intended for his people, it's amazing how different it is from the kind of circumstance that we are dealing with today. And we see, as we noted in Isaiah 3, that God is just simply stripping away those who even are qualified, who could have some wisdom. Jeremiah 17, verse 8. I'm sorry, Deuteronomy 17, verse 8. Here, again, it shows the level of decision-making. Verse 8, it says that if a matter arises which is too hard for you to judge, between degrees of guilt for bloodshed, between one judgment or another, or between one punishment and another, matters of controversy within your gates, then you shall arise and go to the place where the Lord your God chooses, and you shall come to the priests, the Levites, and to the judge there in those days, and inquire of them. They shall pronounce upon you the sentence of judgment, and you shall do according to the sentence which they pronounce upon you. Not a lot of that happening either, is there? People reject decisions. They don't accept what is judged to be. They continue to protest and to reject over and over again. But there was to be this sequence that brings it to a level where finally decisions can be made. I won't turn back to Isaiah 2, where the throne of Jesus Christ is described, that is going to be established on the Mount of Olives. But the nations bring their concerns to him, and he sorts it all out. He makes judgments on nations from afar. The kind of judgment that people will finally be able to recognize and to accept. Jesus Christ will be that highest authority who will make the decisions that will affect the people and that will be righteous in their application. So we can see that if God's law were applied at the local level all the way up to the higher levels, what a difference it would make. There could be effective, righteous, and fair leadership. Leadership that people could trust in. Here in chapter 17 in Deuteronomy, verse 14. Deuteronomy 17, verse 14, continuing here. It says, when you come to the land which the Lord your God is giving you, and possess it and dwell in it, and say, I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me, you shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God shall choose. Now this is an interesting prophecy. Again, you see, before Israel even enters the land that is being given to them, before they even have time and opportunity to set up the structure of the nation that God was providing for them, God predicts that there would come a time when the people would demand to have a king. So they'd be like the other nations around them. And so it's not what God wanted. It wasn't what he would have chosen for them. But he knew that this would come, that they would want to have a king to rule over them like the other nations do. They'd want to have a government that is run by man rather than one that is established by God. But if there must be a king, and God allowed them to make that choice, if there must be a king, then he needed to behave in a way that was not selfish or corrupt. You shall surely, verse 15, set a king over you, whom the Lord your God chooses, one from among your brethren. You shall set as king over you, not a foreigner. Verse 16, he shall not multiply horses for himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt. In other words, to return to their previous pagan religious practices. You shall not return that way again. Neither shall he multiply wives for himself, lest his heart be turned away. Nor shall he greatly multiply silver and gold for himself. Again, I just would consider our national leaders for the last, 50 years or so. And we see that there's been a great deal of selfishness, a great deal of number of situations where people have taken advantage of their position to grow their own wealth or to have some authority over others in a negative way, specifically telling them not to multiply wives. Remember what happened to Solomon, the wisest man who ever walked the earth at that time? His heart was turned away by all the women that he collected. Became corrupt and perverted. Notice also in verse 18, it shall be when the king sits on the throne of his kingdom that he shall write for himself a copy of this law in a book from the one before the priests. The king was to physically write by hand the covenant that he was to live according to and hold the people to, so that he would be able to understand and apply God's law. I doubt that any king ever did that. Read the stories of the kings in the books of Kings and Chronicles. Don't find any evidence that any king ever sat down and followed this instruction. And we can look around today as we can read the books of Kings and Chronicles and see how it worked for Israel and Judah. And we can look around and see how it's working in our nation today. As we mentioned at the beginning of this sermon, and from our own experience, we've seen that national leaders are failing. They have strayed from God. They are not leading his people on a path that will lead to safety and protection. They are leading the nation to destruction. It's a sad thing to see. And it makes it really hard to watch the news every night because you can see these trends developing. So what does it have to do with you today and tomorrow and this week? You're not responsible for this nation's problems. You're not responsible for the wrong direction in which it's going. You're not even responsible for the mistakes that are being made in your community. I really doubt that your neighbors come running to your door to seek wisdom in solving disputes in the neighborhood and controversies. We don't have that kind of leadership responsibility. But will we? Will we at some point be the leaders that we see described here in these passages in Deuteronomy and Exodus? Let's jump way ahead to Revelation chapter 20. Revelation, the 20th chapter. You see, it's not just all about the nation and its corruption and its leaders and it's headed in the wrong path. It comes back to us. It comes back to a responsibility that we have right now. Revelation chapter 20, We read in verse 4. John, in this vision, says, I saw thrones, and they sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Now, you can compare this, of course, to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, where the resurrection that takes place when Jesus returns is described. And those who have died in Christ, Paul also refers to it in 1 Thessalonians 4, will be resurrected and be with him when he returns to the earth. And he says, I saw thrones and those that sat on them, and judgment was committed to them. Who was on these thrones? I saw the souls of those who had been beheaded for their witness to Jesus for the word, who had not worshipped the beast or his image, had not received his mark on their foreheads. In other words, people who were faithful to God in their circumstances, didn't give in to the world and its systems, and in some cases were even martyred. Those are the people that were sitting on those thrones. Those are the people that Paul describes in 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Thessalonians 4, who are resurrected when Jesus Christ returns. And they sit on thrones. They're leaders. Judgment, responsibility is given to them. And they rule with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years. These are the people who will reign with Jesus Christ and take on the responsibilities of leadership and must be the kind of people that were described in these scriptures we've just been reading. Men who are just, men and women who are just, who are wise, who are competent, who are faithful, who are obedient to God, and apply God's law in the judgments that they make. Now, I'm going to speculate. I don't do that often. I'm wondering, put it that way, maybe a better way to put it. Is the description of the levels of leadership that we saw described in Deuteronomy, thousands, hundreds, fifties, tens, is that perhaps a hint at the structure of the government that Jesus Christ will establish when he returns? That those who are sitting on these thrones, those who have this responsibility of leadership and judgment given to them, will be placed in positions that they're prepared to take. Different ones will have different levels of responsibility as they reign with Jesus Christ. From the local level, the community level, the individual level, right up to the highest levels of leadership in the government of Jesus Christ. But those that he chooses will be those who qualify and have the characteristics that we've seen were expected of his leaders, of the leaders of his people. So this is where it gets personal. Are we developing those qualities? Are we developing the qualities of the leaders we saw described here in these verses in Deuteronomy and Exodus? Are we that kind of person that Jesus can place in a position of responsibility and leadership over his nation? We find a very important principle that applies to our preparation for leadership in Matthew chapter 25. It's kind of buried here in the middle of this parable. It's actually a principle that we find elsewhere too, but we'll look at it here. Matthew 25, verse 21. It's the parable of the talents, and we know that those who, the one who increased from 5 talents to 10, and those went from 2 to 4 were both rewarded. But notice what is said to him in verse 21. His Lord said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I'll make you a ruler over many things." Right now, we have very little in terms of responsibility. Right now, what we are doing is very minimal compared to the judgment and sitting on a throne that's described in Revelation 20. But the point that's made here in this parable is that what we do now in the little responsibilities comparatively that we have is how we prove ourselves ready and capable to receive greater responsibility in the kingdom. Those who are faithful over a few things are building the character and the traits that show that they will be faithful over the greater responsibilities as well. So it reminds us that as we live our lives from day to day, we are practicing in our own small, individual, personal way the traits and the characteristics preparing us to be a godly leader. So since we're to have a leadership role, reigning with Jesus Christ, working with him as he brings salvation to all mankind, what lessons are we learning now that will prepare us for that role and that responsibility? Let me just share with you just a few ideas of what we're learning now to help us be prepared for that opportunity to be godly rulers, to rule God's people the way he intended for them to be ruled. First of all, several points for you to think about. This relates to our life today as we prepare for our opportunities tomorrow. First of all, you don't have to be in charge of other people to be a leader. You don't have to be in charge of other people to learn the qualities of leadership. It does not require a position. We may look at ourselves and think, well, I'm not a leader. Nobody's following me. But you don't have to have a designated position to be a leader. One position we all have is Christian. We are all sons of God by that begettal of the Holy Spirit. We all have the responsibility to live up to our calling. You can be a great person, not because you have huge crowds following you in some prominent, important position, but you can be great at being a father, a husband, a mother, a wife, an example, a friend. We become and we practice the qualities of leadership by practicing that practical Christianity in our lives day to day. Another point to consider is that if we're going to be in a formal position of leadership at some point in God's kingdom, that we need to practice and learn those qualities now. We need to practice and learn leadership before we can be put in that position. So we can look in our lives to see how we can be developing those qualities. Remember how the leaders that God intended for his people are described. Able men, fearing God, people of truth, hating covetousness, skilled and wise in the application of God's law, humble, obedient, not using their position to abuse others. Those are the qualities of the leaders that God intended for his people and the leaders that God still intends for his people in his government in the millennium. As we build those kinds of elements into our character, we're practicing, we're exercising personal leadership and preparing for greater opportunities. Faithful in those little things now to build those qualities. Third point to consider is that a leader knows where he's going. A leader knows where he's going. By definition, a leader is one who is out front, one who is headed in the right direction. Again, Isaiah 3, the leaders of this land, of God's nation now, are taking his people on the path to destruction. In preparing to be a leader in the world tomorrow and being the right kind of leader now, we know where we're going. Not necessarily in charge of other people at this point, but yet as an example, showing the way, the path that leads to life. One definition of a leader is a person that others can safely follow. A leader is a person that others can safely follow. So what is the path that you're on? As we are learning leadership principles now, and as we're preparing to have leadership opportunities in the kingdom, we know where we're going, and we're on our way. And we can be people that can be safely followed. In this society today, you have people who have prominent positions, whether athletes or musicians or actors or entertainers or whatever, who are terrible role models. They do a terrible disservice to others by the way that they live, and they are terrible role models. We can set a standard. We can be one that others can safely follow. Another point to consider. A leader is a servant. In our society, leaders are those who think bigly of themselves, people who want to dominate other people and be in control of them. Matthew chapter 20, Jesus instructed the disciples that one who wants to be great must become a servant to all. So we recognize that if we're going to be a leader, then we learn to be a servant. We learn to take care of and to put others before us. The purpose of proper leadership is to take care of others, to take care of the needs of other people, and to serve them, to be a servant. Another point is that a leader is sincere. Again, many leaders today are like the Pharisees were that Jesus condemned, very hypocritical, different on the inside than what they appear to be on the outside, because they're just making an effort to take advantage of their position to control others. So sincerity and being a genuine person is important as we learn to be a leader. A leader has to be strong and courageous. It's not easy to stand for the truth. It takes determination and strength to move forward, continuing to follow God. And at other times, it takes patience and strength to stand still and to wait for God. Take courage. It takes strength of mind and of heart. Paul compares a Christian to a soldier in 2 Timothy 2. One who is dedicated completely to that responsibility. He refers to Christians or compares them to athletes in 1 Corinthians 9, ones who carefully prepare and train in order to succeed. So it takes strength and courage to be a leader. Those are qualities that we're developing. A leader has compassion and empathy for others, for those that he serves. He cares genuinely about them. That kind of love is not natural. It's not automatic. It's not something we typically have. A leader has to develop that love. We pray for God's love to grow within us. One last point to consider. A leader is also a follower. A leader is willing to follow his leaders. A leader is not afraid or hesitant to be loyal. A leader is not cynical or critical of those who are leading him. A degree of cynicism and criticism has developed in God's church over the years because we have seen church leadership in a couple of instances stumble. But the principles of leadership within the church, the principle of order and organization and authority, is still valid, even if people have failed. A leader is willing to follow his leaders. Jesus promised he would build and preserve his church, and he established a framework and a structure for that church. It's different from what you see described in Deuteronomy, the thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. But there is a structure, there is a leadership that God has established within his church. You read of it in Ephesians chapter 4. And so a leader is willing to be part of. Remember the centurion in Matthew chapter 8? He told Jesus that he didn't need to come to actually physically pray for his daughter because he said, I'm a man of authority. In other words, I know how to use authority and I know how to be under authority. And if you say the word, I trust your authority, I know my daughter will be healed. And Jesus said that was an amazing example of faith. So there are many different characteristics and qualities that we can consider that will help us to become ourselves the kinds of leaders that God has wanted to have over his people. We have that opportunity as we are part of the way of life and look forward to the time when Jesus Christ will return. Leadership in the world around us is failing. Leaders in government do not follow God. They do not have the characteristics that he clearly intended for the leaders of his nation to have. I realize some may be sincere, some who are in government positions now might be sincere, but because they don't obey and follow God, they don't know the way to peace. As sincere as they might be, they don't obey God, they lack the wisdom and the understanding and the judgment that they need. So God is training and preparing you right now. He's giving you the opportunity to build that foundation of genuine, godly leadership. So we look into God's word for instruction on how to live, what kind of person we need to be in our circumstances right now. We look for the application of God's law in our lives. And in doing so, you are continually learning to distinguish good and evil. You are building the mind and the character of a king and a priest. And you are preparing to take the role of a godly leader.